Okay, Brightside besties, you've heard me talk about it for weeks. My family and I are going to Miami. And while we're away, I'm hosting my house on Airbnb.
That's going to be such an amazing trip. You have to rent a boat for sunset while you're there, especially since you're going to get a little extra cash from your hosting gig.
100%. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello, sunshine.
Hey, fam. Today on The Bright Side, we're talking women's health with gynecologist and CEO of Sanctum Med and Wellness. It's Dr. Jessica Shepherd. Dr. Shepherd weighs in on the growing debate online about birth control and its side effects, her holistic approach to medicine, and she also shares how we can all be better advocates for our health and well-being.
It's Friday, April 19th. I'm Danielle Robay.
And I'm Simone Boyce, and this is The Bright Side from Hello, Sunshine.
Okay, first things first, Taylor Swift's new album is officially here, The Tortured Poets Department. Here's a primer to get you all hyped up if you haven't listened yet. It's her 11th album.
Wow.
I can't believe that I've lived through 11 Taylor Swift albums. Can you?
No, that number is staggering.
I just remember listening to Taylor Swift in high school because Teardrops on My Guitar would come on and I would like cry along with her.
That sounds about right.
So I can't believe we're on number 11, but people online are excited. There's some really dope features, Florence and the Machine, Post Malone, and Taylor is always really creative with her marketing. One of the fun things that I saw her do is she offered a limited run of autographed LPs for $50. LPs meaning like the vinyl version of her album, and some fans on social obviously got them and they vanished in 20 minutes. I'm surprised they lasted that long. Swifties are for real. I kind of compare it to like Beatlemania. I know that's a crazy comparison, but that's the hysteria that goes on.
I don't think it's that crazy. I mean, there's no fandom like the Taylor Swift fandom.
I feel like Justin Bieber at one moment had like a huge fandom like that. Obviously Michael Jackson did, but I can't think of many other artists who get people this hype.
But I think Taylor Swift is almost in a league of her own because of the lore and the mythology that she generates and the Easter eggs that she buries in any of her public appearances or her wardrobe. And then she follows back up on that in the album. So she really does create a narrative quite unlike most artists out there.
Yeah, I think Taylor and Beyonce are really meticulous about how they launch albums or collections or anything they do. So it's fun to see people that are that dedicated to their work.
Okay, we have some news that is making my millennial heart flutter. Nelly and Ashanti are expecting their first baby together, Danielle.
Can we name it? Is it the Chantelle baby?
I'm really hoping they come up with something better than that. So just a little recap on their dating history. I mean, they were such a fixture in my childhood in the early 2000s, but they dated for nearly a decade back then. And then they also broke up for about 10 years, but reunited in 2023. And they've been together ever since. When I saw that they were back together, I was just like so overjoyed for them. This is Ashanti's first baby at 43, which I love that for her. I love that she's creating a family later in life, such an inspiration. Nelly, who's almost 50, has 4 kids. He has 2 from a previous relationship, along with his late sister's children, whom he adopted in 2005 after she died of cancer. I just learned that. These two coming back together, starting a family together, I mean, this is up there with like Jada and Will for me, Freddie Prinze Jr. and Sarah Michelle Gellar.
What?
What do you mean?
No. The Jada and Will love, Ashanti and Nelly are not in that category.
No?
That's crazy talk.
Oh, I completely disagree.
Maybe Ben and Jen. I feel like they're making people want to contemplate getting back together with an ex.
Yeah, I could see that. I loved their music from back in the day. So agree to disagree.
I keep thinking like, does the baby come out and do they put like a little Band-Aid under the eye for Nelly if it's a boy?
There might be some Band-Aid insignia like sewn into a onesie or something. We'll have to wait and see.
They're definitely going to have a fresh pair of Air Force Ones. Okay, I'm going to stop making Nelly puns. But anyways,
this is going to be the freshest little baby out there.
Okay, this next story is something I'm having a hard time talking about. It. It's straight out of my nightmares, quite honestly. Emma Roberts recently took to Architectural Digest for a home tour. I love those videos that they do. I can't believe celebrities let us into their houses like that. Do you watch these?
I love this series. I'm obsessed with interiors, so this scratches that itch for me.
Okay, so Emma Roberts did hers, and there's an entire wall of dolls. I'm talking Barbies, babies, action figures. She says that she hopes that every night they're going to come awake, and it would be so thrilling. Truly out of my nightmares. Do you have any dolls in your house? I know you have two boys. Like, do they like any of those?
I don't have any dolls, no. I collect antiques, though. I collect vintage furniture.
Okay, but that's cool.
Thank you. I appreciate it. You know, I've seen the response online to this, and I have to go off for a second on a little rant because it bothers me that people are making fun of Emma for collecting dolls. Especially, I've seen some female empowerment accounts who are making fun of her for this. And I don't think that that's necessarily fair because men collect a ton of stuff too, like pocket knives, fighter jet models, cars, action figures, aka man dolls. I mean, it's the same thing. So
Christmas ornaments.
Yeah. Like, if she enjoys this and this brings her joy, like, let her have her little doll collection.
So it's hard for me to even imagine collections. I grew up in a family that said collections are for museums. Everything was like about essentialism. My parents were like anti-stuff because my dad always said, if you collect stuff, then you have to spend money to store it and take care of it. And I think my grandfather was a depression baby. So it was just like no stuff. So I can't personally imagine. Like, I collect books, maybe. That's like the only thing that I have that even rivals her doll collection. But I'm with you in terms of happiness. I mean, if that's what gives her joy, then all power to her.
There's this meme that's been going around for a little while, and it says that your 30s are all about reconnecting with the things that you loved in your teenage years. Mm-hmm. And I've been looking for ways to do that intentionally in my own life over the past year or so. And it has been so fulfilling. It's been so much fun to just tap into that childlike mentality and do the things that my teenage self loved.
Like what?
Like going to theme parks with my friends.
Also a thing of my nightmares, but keep going.
Like getting ready with my friends again. That's something that I feel like you lose in your 30s when you grow up. Like that time when you're getting ready in the bathroom with your girlfriends, that's such a sacred time. And it's such a coming of age institution. So I've been trying to do that more. That's really fun.
That's so fun. We used to sit on the floor in front of like those mirrors that you get at Target for $20 and
yeah,
do our makeup and listen to music and talk about who we were going to see that night.
Exactly. Talk about your crushes. It's fun.
Yeah, I agree with you. Up next, we're talking women's health and wellness with Dr. Jessica Shepherd.
We'll be right back, y'all. Danielle, I just had one of my best friends in town, and it was so amazing to vacation in my hometown. But now I have got the itch. I need to figure out how to take this podcast on the road because I want to travel, okay?
Wait, where would you want to go?
Honestly, throw a dart at Europe and I'm there.
I mean, you're not really telling everyone the full story because you're also going to be hosting your house on Airbnb while you're away.
I am. It's my secret weapon. I'm honestly surprised at how easy it's been. I mean, we're already going to be away, so I have two options. Either my house just sits there or I can make a little extra passive income.
They don't call you see money for nothing.
I love the idea that another family can come and enjoy the home that we love so much. I mean, we have everything you need to travel with kids. Bunk beds, high chairs, strollers, toys, you name it, we got it.
Hey, you forgot a pool. I want to come to the pool.
The pool is the best part, but pools also aren't cheap. So this is the perfect way to earn a little extra cash to help maintain said pool. It's honestly a win-win.
Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Welcome back. Simone and I are so grateful that our next guest is here with us today because you and I both have a lot of questions. For weeks, we've been seeing people post videos on Instagram and TikTok that document them getting off the pill because of the negative side effects that they say that they experience. And this is a big part of both of our algorithms now, and we've been talking about doing this segment like for months.
It's really hard to watch this discourse take place online, not just because, you know, of course, we don't like to see people in pain, but it's also clear that a lot of women don't have the information they need before they decide on contraception. And also, it feels like they're getting gaslit whenever they do complain about their issues with contraception. But fortunately, we have called in an expert, Danielle. We've got OBGYN and CEO of Sanctum Med. It's Dr. Jessica Shepherd. Welcome to The Bright Side.
Hi, everybody. I'm so excited to be here on The Bright Side, especially with you two amazing women.
Dr. Shepherd, it is so great to have you here. We've been talking about the growing number of social media posts on birth control, and women are really questioning if they want to be on it or not. Where do you think this is all coming from, and are you seeing it in your practice?
Yeah, you know, I think that there has been a lot that we've seen in the last maybe 6 months to a year when it comes to birth control. And I think that's because we're just more aware, we're more informed. I think the ability for us to have this information allows us to say, hey, I actually have a choice. Now, the backlash of that is that there usually is going to be a bad versus good, right? Mm-hmm. That's usually where we see everything go with, well, if you're on it, it's bad. And if you're off it, it's good. I don't think there's ever a perfectly right answer. And so I think that's where that comes with the information, which we'll get in our discussion, for people to actually have a choice and be okay with where they fall into if they're on or off.
As a physician and OBGYN, I mean, you really are the ideal line of defense between information and misinformation. And I'm sure a lot of patients are bringing those questions into your office. So how do you help patients select their birth control in the first place?
Yeah, that's a great question. So going back to just a quick history of like when birth control came on the scene in the 1940s, it was the birth control pill, right? And so it wasn't perfect, but it was a great way for women to have the choice to prevent pregnancy. So fast forward to where we are here in 2024, think about where we are right now with reproductive justice and how important birth control now is for some people in certain states where they live. We're kind of back in a place almost to like where we were in the 1940s, as far as access and the ability for women to make decisions for themselves. The fact is that we have so many different varieties, types, ways that women can use birth control, and that's the beauty of it. So I usually counsel them on all forms of birth control, like literally everything that's out there. People will usually say, oh, I'm not taking that. And I dig deeper. I'm like, oh, well, why? And what do you think about it? And a lot of times they'll be like, oh, well, I didn't really realize that that was the information. Now I can kind of clear that off the slate and make a better decision for myself.
I can tell you why I haven't been on birth control for probably 10 years. I mean, when I was first taking the pill, I struggled with depression. Mm-hmm. I did not feel like myself. I had suicidal thoughts. It got very severe for me. I also tried the NuvaRing on my freaking honeymoon.
Oh, no.
I got migraines, which I think were connected to the NuvaRing. And I think this is what women are struggling with. It's like, okay, wait a minute. I've had adverse experiences with birth control. I can point to 3 to 6 other girlfriends of mine who've had adverse experiences. How do I sort through the anecdotal evidence versus what we really know definitively about birth control?
I think that's a great place to, for many women who are listening, to being like, that was me. Like, I had something that happened, or I didn't feel like myself, because everyone's physiology is so different. Mm-hmm. So it's very hard for me to predict how someone's going to respond to a certain form of birth control. So now let's go back to the fundamental of, are you trying to prevent pregnancy or not? And if someone is, I'm like, okay, let's go through all the different varieties and let's figure out, let's tweak something for the birth control pill. Say we have so many different varieties in whether it has a different amount of estrogen in it, whether it's a monophasic, a triphasic, whether it's only progesterone, you know, maybe mm-hmm. you're responsive to estrogen in a way that is not good for you. And I'm like, well, let's try a progesterone only pill. And then I would say, even though it's a limited list, there are some birth controls that don't have hormones. But I do have a lot of patients who are like, I hear you, Dr. Shepherd. I know you have other options. I'm not open to them. I just want to be off. And I'm like, great.
Yeah.
That's patient autonomy. That's your choice.
Yeah. What I'm hearing is that it's not a one size fits all approach or solution. I think what's so great about the internet is that women are getting to share their stories. But what I'm recognizing is not everybody's body is the same.
One of the reservations that I have about birth control is how it manipulates the cycle. And I just feel like the cycle is an indicator of overall health for the female body. And so can you explain, how does the pill change the cycle?
Yeah. So when you look at the phases of your menstrual cycle, you have the actual bleed, which is your menstruation, right? So that's kind of how we dictate what is day one of your cycle, is your first day of a bleed. And that can last anywhere from 5 to 7 days. And then you go to the follicular phase, right? So you don't get pregnant. It's like Groundhog's Day every month. Your body isn't default to get pregnant. So it's like, let's get pregnant. And then it doesn't. And it's like, oh. And then every month it's like, let's get pregnant. So in birth control, what it's trying to do is prevent that actual follicle from releasing during the ovulatory portion, which is that just that short time frame and when you release an egg. And so in order for it to do that, the way that it does is it, for lack of a better term, overrides the system, right? And so it's overriding what your body is continuing to do, where it's saying, I'm going to decrease, whether it's the LH surge, which comes right before ovulation, so that it's not a surge. And then the body will be like, oh, well, if the LH is not going up, then I'm not going to ovulate. And just putting in these subtle points throughout the menstrual cycle in order for it to suppress either ovulation or not have the endometrial lining, which is getting ready for that deposited fertilized egg, to have the development that it usually does.
In terms of specific side effects for birth control, can we go through a few of them and bust some myths?
Yeah, do it.
Okay. Does the pill increase risk of cancer?
That is a good question. So when we look at cancers, right, because it's never just one cancer, it decreases your risk of ovarian cancer. It reduces your risk of endometrial cancer. Does it increase your risk of breast cancer? Yes. With that caveat answer, I always say, from a scientist's perspective, when that answer is yes, you always have to add to that, but with what risk? Right? Because it can never just be a yes, it increases your risk for breast cancer, which I believe is what we see going through kind of like social media. It's like a very simple kind of statement. Birth control increases breast cancer. When we actually look at like the relative risk or the absolute risk of what it's going to increase it by, it actually is a very small risk of what it's going to increase it by. So let me even break that down further for you. If you were to take all the reproductive organs, including breast, including that into the reproductive organs, the most deadly form of reproductive cancers is ovarian, right? And so when you look at it from more of a broad perspective of everything that I do in my life, whether it's from a medication perspective, whether it's a lifestyle, whether it's walking down the street, is a risk. Mm-hmm. How do I want to kind of prioritize that risk in what I'm looking for as an outcome? What's important for my health? What's important for my lifestyle? That's what I believe is more of the important question.
And like your family, I'm not good at science, but I can imagine family history comes into play. You really kind of have to be the CEO of your own health.
Absolutely. And family history is an important part.
Okay, I have two more for you. Birth control and infertility. Is there a link there?
We have a lot of studies looking at infertility and actual birth control, and it does not increase your risk of infertility. And the reason I'll even expound on that more is that infertility is caused by multiple factors. And a lot of times it can be due to the tubes. It can be due to the ovary. It can be due to the uterus. It can be due to the sperm, right? And so there can be a male factor of infertility. So when you lump those all together, there has been no direct link between birth control causing one of those causes of infertility significantly. And the other thing that I would say is when we look at actual reasons for infertility nowadays, most of that will be to things such as PCOS, endometriosis. And then also we do have a higher age at which most women will have children now, and that significantly increases your risk of infertility.
Can I ask one follow-up question about the infertility? Does birth control cause temporary infertility, not long-term, but temporary? As the cycle is getting back to normal, is there any risk of temporary infertility?
Depends what kind of birth control you are on. Because so if it, say the IUD is what we would consider a local form of birth control. So once you remove it, it's not there. And so fertility is resumed. Birth control pills, the one that is in your arm, the implanted one, those ones, because they're systemic, and depending on how long they were used, once you come off, it does take some time for it to somewhat come out of your system completely, for your system to start doing the natural course of the ovulation and the menstrual and luteal and follicular phase, for it to now say, okay, we're doing full frontal of a cycle and I'm ready to get pregnant. So that time frame is different for everyone. So I don't know if I would term it like an infertile time. I would say it's more of like a resolution time that maybe some people are not getting pregnant, but I've had plenty of patients who come off and then the next month they get pregnant. But I do always make a disclaimer. I'll say, hey, coming off birth control, depending on how long they've been on, can take up to a year where you might become pregnant because of it coming out of your system, which I can never dictate how long it would be for someone.
Okay, the last one that I hear that's very common online is weight gain.
This is where I will personally say I have seen people have slight weight gains, depending on which one. I will say that for people who are on the injectable, I do see a significant increase in weight for those patients. I would say with birth control pills, it's like a 5 to 7 pound difference that I would see in patients that's been validated in studies. But I also think a lot of that weight gain too has to be this difference in water retention. I will say that even I go through that now, you know, being on the IUD at certain parts of my cycle, I'm like, oh, I'm definitely in that phase because I just look different.
Me too.
My pants fit different.
It's in my face also.
But then it's like the next week, you're like, oh, I am cut this week. And you're like, oh, well, I just didn't retain all that water. So the weight gain is, I think, is a very valid point. When patients bring that up to me, I do take that seriously because they know their body.
Dr. Shepherd, we're going to take a quick break. But when we come back, we're talking more specifically about IUDs and the videos on social media of people recording their IUD procedures.
Danielle, I just had one of my best friends in town, and it was so amazing to vacation in my hometown. But now I have got the itch. I need to figure out how to take this podcast on the road because I want to travel, okay?
Wait, where would you want to go?
Honestly, throw a dart at Europe and I'm there.
I mean, you're not really telling everyone the full story because you're also going to be hosting your house on Airbnb while you're away.
I am. That's my secret weapon. I'm honestly surprised at how easy it's been. I mean, we're already going to be away, so I have two options. Either my house just sits there or I can make a little extra passive income.
They don't call you see money for nothing.
I love the idea that another family can come and enjoy the home that we love so much. I mean, we have everything you need to travel with kids. Bunk beds, high chairs, strollers, toys, you name it, we got it.
Hey, you forgot a pool. I want to come to the pool.
The pool is the best part, but pools also aren't cheap. So this is the perfect way to earn a little extra cash to help maintain said pool. It's honestly a win-win.
Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
During the summertime when the weather gets hot, I can only imagine how much time you plan to spend outside with friends and family or on your couch with that AC blasting. AT&T 5G and home internet keeps you connected, whether you're at home or on the go, so you can stay connected to your loved ones and to your favorite things. Whether you're sharing pics from the best rooftops, video calling your friends from an outdoor concert, or streaming your favorite show, episode after episode after episode. So connect at home or on the move with AT&T 5G and home internet and create memories and more all summer long. AT&T 5G requires compatible plan and device. Coverage not available everywhere. Learn more at att.com/5G for you.
We're back. Dr. Shepherd, I'd love to have you weigh in on the discussion around IUDs and the pain involved with these procedures, because this conversation is popping off on Instagram and TikTok right now. Patients are filming themselves getting an IUD inserted and removed. But from your perspective, is there any reason to believe that the IUD is any more problematic or risky than other forms of birth control?
I will say, as a procedure, right? It's a procedure that's needed to take it in and also remove it. Granted, putting it in is much harder than taking it out. Is that it is, I like to put it in the category of uncomfortable. There are some people, I mean, I've put in thousands because I love IUDs. And so I would say over the course of my 15 plus years of putting it in, I do preface it with, this is an uncomfortable procedure. If at any moment it goes to exquisite or severe pain, I need you to let me know. And I think that's where, as providers, we fault. I have heard too many stories from patients where they get some type of procedure, whether it's an endometrial biopsy, an IUD insertion, where there is no conversation about it. Like, we're going to do this and your legs are up, and then all of a sudden there's instruments going into your vagina and there is no word about what's happening. And so I've heard that. And I think that's where it becomes very painful, because there's no conversation about it.
Well, that's one of the questions that people are raising right now online is, should there be mm-hmm. more anesthesia around this procedure? Mm-hmm. What do you think?
I think that if patients' pain tolerance, okay, is very subjective. And that's why I'm talking about pain in this category of where, between the two of you, you guys could have the same experience of an uncomfortable or painful situation and report it completely different, right? And so there are people who know, I don't have a good pain tolerance. And I'm like, great, thank you for letting me know. I may give you an injection of lidocaine into your cervix to help with the insertion, okay? There are some people who are like, you know what? I'm okay. Let's try it. Let's go. I walk them through it. I tell them when the most uncomfortable portion is coming up. I also let them know at any time during this procedure, if you feel it's getting to a level where this is now really intolerable pain, you have to let me know. I think that we do need to take a step back as healthcare providers to give a voice to patients, to allow them to express what they may be feeling, what they're going through, to be heard, especially women. One thing that we have not brought up in that conversation is, again, going to the intimacy of that actual kind of interaction. And for women who have maybe had some issues or maybe some exchanges or even assaults or trauma in their previous life, and now something going on down there where there's not a lot of conversation, that can trigger a lot of anxiety, which can heighten pain. It can trigger a lot of tense moments in the body that can trigger much more pain that's felt. So I think, again, bringing it back from the patient perspective, am I okay? And then for providers to be a little bit more astute to saying, are you okay? Is this something that is outside of this experience that maybe needs to be attended to before we actually go through with this procedure?
I took a college course about women's health that revolutionized my life. And one of the things that I learned that I realized a lot of women don't know is that during any procedure that you're having, your OBGYN mm-hmm. should be talking you through it and saying, I'm inserting this. This is going to be cold. And that actually...
The cold. They never warn you about the cold.
But talking you through it really helps. And I think that's something that mm-hmm. people should know to expect. And if you're not getting it, you should ask for it.
Yeah. I think that patients can stop us. What right. are you doing? What's going on?
Yeah.
And sometimes we're not heard because we don't know what questions we should be asking. So, Dr. Shepherd, what questions should patients be asking their doctor when they're considering changing to a new type of birth control or experimenting with one in the first place?
I think they should know, what does it do? I think the questions that you asked previously on, like, how does it actually work? Because think about it, such an umbrella term, birth control.
Right.
Yet there's like, what, 7 to 10 different types of birth control? What are the different types? How do they work? And do you think this is a good fit for me? Right? I think those are valid questions to ask. I always say to patients, you know, if you feel that you get to the end of your appointment, which again is always short and, you know, cut off, that you didn't get all your questions answered, then don't make a decision in that time. We are the CEO of our health. Being the CEO requires doing research and saying, for me as a person in the journey that I am, in the time and space where I am, and why I'm wanting to get this certain thing at the doctor's office, I have to do the work as well. I have to do the work.
Well, that's where I'm really enjoying learning more about functional medicine. For anyone who doesn't know, functional medicine is a form of alternative medicine that focuses on identifying the root causes of disease and pain. And Dr. Shepherd, you studied at the Institute for Functional Medicine. So what is it that appeals to you about functional medicine, and where do you see it offering an alternative to traditional Western approaches?
Yeah, that is, you know, a great way to segue into how I practice now. You know, I started out very evidence-based academic medicine. And just over the years, I've really allowed myself to step back and say, how can I serve my patients in another way where they're more a part of the actual diagnosis and management of their body? And that's where functional medicine comes in, because it's behavioral change.
Yep.
It's lifestyle changes, which to me has been the hardest part of practicing medicine, is because I will say, I know why this is happening from a functional standpoint, and here's how we can do this together. But you're going to have to do some of this work, because it requires a lot of different changes.
Can you give us an example of some of those lifestyle changes? If a patient came to you seeking out a functional medicine approach, what kind of lifestyle changes would you prescribe in order to minimize painful periods or regulate hormones?
Absolutely. So when we look at that actual cycle that we went through earlier and the different phases, is being very in tune with your body. So knowing when you're going through those different phases. And then in that is adjusting, whether it's sleep, whether it's the type of exercise that you do, whether it's the type of foods that you eat. So I do believe that nutrition is one of the most important pillars of health. But in conjunction with now how your body regulates and how your body changes the intake that you get through food, according to your cycle, that's like a revolutionary science that really requires you to listen to your body, to understand your body, and to pushing through those hard times initially when you start to make those behavioral changes, because your body is always going to want to revert back to what it does naturally or what it's been doing forever. And so that push through really is where you're going to get the benefit. I've noticed for patients who have endometriosis, when we're actually able to restrict some things from their diet, they do see some changes in how they have pain. Or the best thing also is what we're able to do with our mind. I'm very big on mindfulness and the ability to mitigate and get through pain through our minds. But again, that's a lot of work and a lot of what we see in Eastern medicine, but the ability to do that is there. And I firmly believe that.
I have one last question before you leave. I want you to talk about your philosophy as a physician.
Yeah, my philosophy really is I want people to be their best advocate and really tune into, what do I want as the best outcome for myself in health? Because I do believe that health is your best currency. You are the one who gets to decide what you want to show up with in 20, 30 years from now. And so having a team on your side from a medical perspective, from health advocacy perspective, and from who you surround yourself with and how they believe in health, truly is going to form and weave this lifestyle for you in health and wellness, and to give you the best outcome and to help build a legacy in health, because we have nothing but our health in the end. And you have to be willing to do the work in order to get that amazing outcome of impeccable quality of life.
Yes. Well said. Thank you for your time and for your great work.
Also, Dr. Shepherd, I have to mention, OBGYNs are heroes in my eyes, but specifically Black OBGYNs. I chose a Black OBGYN to deliver both of my babies because I felt scared and unsafe about the conditions that exist for Black women in the medical system, especially as they're giving birth. It makes me emotional to talk about it. But thank you for pursuing this work and answering the call.
Thank you. I really appreciate that, because it's rough out here in these streets. You know, yeah. It's not many of us, and the calling is like so intense because we see it. And then we look at the force that we have and we're like, there's only so many of us. How do we actually like accommodate this great need?
Yeah.
And it sometimes it's heartbreaking because you're like, I can't get to everybody and I want to. And how do we do this? So thank you for those words, because, you know, we have little groups of like OBGYNs and we talk and, you know, we go through some of the times that we hear of tragedies and we're just like, I don't understand why it keeps happening, you know? So it's very heartbreaking. And from a standpoint of people who do it as their work, but we can't fix it.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's hard.
But you are fixing it just by existing. Like just knowing that I can seek out a Black OBGYN and I can feel safe with her, feel safe with someone like you. That is part of the solution.
I appreciate that.
Dr. Shepherd, thank you so much for coming here and bringing honesty. I actually love that you were like, listen, there's not always going to be a clear answer to this question. There is nuance here, and that's so important. I'm someone who exists in the nuance. I seek it out. I appreciate it. And I'm so happy that you brought that to our show. So thank you.
Thank you for having me. I love this conversation.
Dr. Jessica Shepherd is an OBGYN and the founder and CEO of Sanctum Med and Wellness.
Okay, before we wrap today's show, I just want to say that Dr. Jess is a unicorn to me.
What do you mean by that?
I find her to be one of the most smart, thoughtful doctors that I've ever interviewed, and I've interviewed a ton. And I love her holistic approach to medicine and to science and to our bodies. The functional medicine approach is something I think we both love.
I really appreciate a doctor who refuses to stay stale in the past. She is constantly growing and evolving and learning. I mean, she studied at the Institute for Functional Medicine, so she is constantly seeking out new approaches to her field and what she does and looking for ways to better serve her patients. For me, the biggest takeaway from that conversation is to be your own best advocate. And that is the cornerstone of her philosophy as a physician. And I just think that that's so important. Whatever kind of medical treatment you are seeking, you know, whether you're looking for birth control, whether you are, you know, recovering from some sort of trauma, whether you're giving birth.
Yeah. And I also think that our lives are so cluttered. We're consuming so much. There's so much information that it's really hard to take the time to be the CEO of your own health. Like our health is like number one. So I like that reframe. I like taking responsibility for your own health. And I love what you said at the end of that interview in terms of seeking out a Black OBGYN. Dr. Shepherd has been so committed to creating safe spaces for patients and for women. She even started her own practice, Sanctum Med and Wellness. I'm just grateful for people like her.
Anyone who is her patient is so lucky.
Yes.
Danielle, I am so stoked to report that we are going to be making this a regular thing. We're going to have on a women's health expert about once a month to answer our health questions and take care of some very crucial myth busting for us. So send us an email or a voice note with your questions to hello@thebrightsidepodcast.com.
On Monday, we are manifesting big love. I'm not just talking about me. I said we on purpose. We have the privilege of speaking to Catherine Woodward Thomas, author of the New York Times bestselling book, Calling in the One, 7 Weeks to Attract the Love of Your Life. It is a must listen. The Bright Side is a production of Hello Sunshine and iHeart Podcasts and is executive produced by Reese Witherspoon.
Production by Arcana Audio. Courtney Gilbert is our associate producer. Our producers are Stephanie Brown and Jessica Wank. Our engineer is PJ Shahamat. And our senior producer is Itzi Quintanilla.
Arcana's executive producers are Francis Harlow and Abby Ruzica. Arcana's head of production is Matt Schultz.
Natalie Tuluk and Maureen Polo are the executive producers for Hello Sunshine.
Julia Weaver is the supervising producer, and Ali Perry is the executive producer for iHeart Podcasts. This week's episodes were recorded by Graham Gibson.
Our theme song is by Anna Stumpf and Hamilton Lighthouser.
Special thanks to Connell Byrne and Will Pearson.
That's it for today's show. I'm Simone Boyce. You can find me at Simone Boyce on Instagram and TikTok.
I'm Danielle Robay on Instagram and TikTok. That's R-O-B-A-Y.
See you Monday, fam.
See you later. Simone, I was talking to my dad yesterday, and I'm determined to get him to list our family home on Airbnb while my parents are away.
What does it look like?
It's really great. It's such a neighborhoody suburb with cute coffee shops and people walking around talking to each other. The streets are lined with trees, and it's close to the water. Honestly, when I go home, I get such a good night's sleep. It kind of feels like a vacation.
I love that for you, sleepy girl. It's a win-win.
Okay, Mom, Dad, are you guys listening? Your home may be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.